Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
The Action Man, 27-8, huge weekend in NYC, man. Doesn't get bigger.
Right, as a... It was a weird fucking weekend, honestly. It was a very weird weekend. I'm still trying to process it.
One, two, three.
Today's episode of the Schmo Zone is brought to you by Manscaped. And I know David is a proud supporter and loves using Manscaped because our bathroom literally is full of Manscaped products. And why don't you tell the audience why you love it so much?
It's like a one-stop shop for all of my daily needs. I'm talking about this lawnmower 4.0. This is my favorite thing right here. The light on there too. Now, as you know, you always got to trim, right, Helen?
Yeah.
And this thing, I've never bled, never cut myself shaving because of it. Loved using their Lawnmower 4.0, the weed whacker, for the nose hairs, the air hairs.
Yeah.
Very clean. I know it's November, no shave Schmovember, but we'll get to be using these at the end of the month, or I guess the beginning of December.
Yeah, well, because I was going to say you using the weed whacker, because we all know you're a pretty hairy man and your nose hairs, you know, get pretty long. But not only that, though.
Why are you lying about my nose hairs? It's my chest hairs that get long. Let's be real here.
Well, that too. And never mind. But
okay.
Not only are those products good, but I do know that Manscaped recently came out with a 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner, right?
That's right.
Smells good, too.
They got their body wash as well, but also, too, I mean, they have a cologne. They have their ball wash, which is great, their crop cleanser. All these different products that can fulfill your needs for smelling great in those most intimate, private areas. Check them out and go use the promo code SCHMO to get 20% off. Manscaped.com. Promo code SCHMO, 20% off.
Men, you won't regret it. It's that one-stop shop, and trust me, your woman will thank you.
Finally, the USC debut, MSG, you get the job done. Biggest stage.
First round knockout.
USC 268.
In 3 weeks, I went from thinking like, man, like, you know, maybe this is the end of it. I'm just going to try to bang out like 10 fights in a year and be done with it, to knocking out a guy who was like on the cusp of being ranked in a first round knockout, Madison Square Garden, a fight they never said I was going to win. Now I'm like, shit, what do I do? Like, all right, well, what comes next? So
it's crazy too, because Phil Hawes, his last two fights, it was against Imavov, who just beat the number 11th ranked guy, Edmund Shabazian.
Oh, yeah.
He destroyed Edmund. And
yeah.
I mean, there. And then Kyle Daukaus too, who had the no contest with Kevin Holland. Yeah. So he's been fighting kind of the cream of crop in the middleweight division. You get this guy and you take him out at the end of the first round.
Yeah, man, it sucks to be him. Like, I mean, I've been doing this for a long time. I got, like, what, like 36 fights now? It's his first UFC fight, but, I mean, I've been doing this for – I've been a professional for 10 years now. Like, I've been around for a long time. So it's just weird, though, because, like, man, I'm like, that kind of puts a weird – you're in a weird position. Like, what do I do now? Like, I can't just go fight anybody. So now I'm like, well, do I, like, try to work up at the 85 rankings? Do I go to 70? What do I do? So now we're just kind of like, all right, well, this is we were excited for the fight, but we never gave any thought to, like, what comes next. And now that we're here, we're like, oh.
Yeah, but I heard you in the post-fight press conference, you were even throwing out December.
Yeah, I'm told them I'm down. Like, if they can give me a fight December, January, I am down. Like, I'm 34, man. I'm not a young kid in this sport. So I train 7 days a week. Like, I don't, you know, I don't fuck around or whatever. So I'm like, I would gladly hop in December. I don't got to take any time off. I'm trying to make as much money as possible in the time frame I have left, because I'm not going to have a 10-year career. You know, I'm not going to fight to the end of my 40s. Like, it's just not going to happen. So if I can fight, like, December, January, then maybe again like March, I am down for it. Like I'm just trying to bang them out.
You said a few weeks before the fight you were contemplating retirement.
Yeah, it's funny, man. Like right before I got the initial call, I was actually talking to Eric Nipsick over at Extreme. I'm like, you know, like I'm just reached that point to where I'm, you don't think it's gonna happen anymore. So we're just like, you know, he's telling me to stay in it. But I'm like, I've heard that for years. Like stay in it. You have your ups and downs. You do all the right stuff, and you don't get your shots. So I'm just like, you know, maybe I'll just bang out 10 fights this year. I had 4 fights before that. I was like, I'll try to get 10 fights this year. If I get signed, cool. If not, like, you know, I'll be happy going 10-0 for a year and then walking away from it. So you reach that point, you're just like, you know, like, I just – fighters have shelf lives, man. I'm 34. I've been doing this for a long time. Like, you don't get any younger doing this. It takes years off of you. And you don't want to be one of those guys who hangs around too long. And we all see it. Like, guys refuse to give up and they refuse to hang it up when they should when their body starts slowing down. And you don't want to be that guy. So you're just like, you know – I'll try to make a bang now when I can. If they sign me, then we'll keep going. If not, got to go find something else to do.
So did you retire twice before?
I have. I retired once after Contenders.
2018. It was I think it was 2018. It was the second season, the first episode. You got the TKO victory in the third round, and you didn't get signed.
Hook kick. There's like 4 in UFC existence. Didn't get signed. I signed Greg Hardy instead. Yeah, how'd that work out? Like, yeah, they got Greg Hardy, and that dude doesn't know the rules. So, like, good for that.
And they signed someone this season who didn't make weight.
So, like, you know what's funny is everyone on my season, on my episode that won, who didn't get signed initially, had been signed already. And, like, they've all gone fought multiple times. I was just the one guy left out. And then you see after, like, that episode, he starts handing – I think the episode after that, he handed out, like, 5 contracts. And I'm like, what the hell, man? Like, yeah. Now a good guy missed weight. He gets a contract. I'm just like, what did I do? Like,
I was going to ask you, what do you think it was that night, going back to it, like, when you've had time to reflect that they didn't sign you?
I don't know, man. Like, it's – I stopped the guy. Apparently, I waited too long. But, like, Kevin Holland decisioned his guy, and he got signed later. Before me, so I'm just like, I don't understand. To this day, no one still knows, and we're all just kind of like, it's just your luck, man, accept it.
But on the bright side, though, then, you know, Madison Square Garden, probably the most anticipated card of the year, 268, that first round knockout.
This is, like, by far the best card of the year. And, yeah. Like, dude, my special power is, like, failing forward. So, like, when things go wrong, at least I end up in, like, kind of good spots. Like, I missed Contenders, but I fell into PFL. This time I missed, the first fight in the Apex. But they're like, oh, yeah, go fight at Madison Square Garden. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, 1 bucket list thing down. Yeah. UFC fight, 2 bucket lists. And then I knock out a guy in the first round. I'm just like, this could not have happened any better.
And let's go back to the circumstances. You were the biggest underdog, 3-1 underdog, and he landed more strikes and significant strikes against you. 0-3 in the takedowns, though, but all it took was the one that mattered the most, man. And when you ripped his body, I mean, you you crumbled a little bit there.
It was weird, man. So, like, it's the first time in my life going into the fight, I wasn't the big, scary black guy. And, like, he was a big, scary black guy. And I was like, holy shit, is that what that feels like? So we touched gloves, and I was like, he is big. Like, he was not this big yesterday. So it was the first time in my career. I'm like, I may have made a significant, like, miscalculation in, like, the size of this man. So that fight started, man. He's just, like, hats off to him. Like, you know, he can be a dick about things, but he's a hell of an athlete, man. Like, I realized real quick that, like, I'm not the better athlete here. It's one of those times where, like, I have none of the physical advantages. But, I said before, man, like, he's an athlete, but I'm a fighter, man. He's a athlete who fights. I'm a dog who fights. So, you know, this is what I do. I think I'm just a tougher human being than he is. Kind of had to weather that storm. Like, he was trying to kill me, but luckily for me, you know, I'm a very durable dude. And as clean, that was the best I've ever seen him look in a fight. Like, hats off to him. His striking caught me off guard. I don't think he'd be that clean. But he still punches like a wrestler, if, like, that makes sense. Like, you know, strikers... Someone who's grown up, like, striking, like, we snap when we punch. Right? Like, a lot of guys who come from wrestling, they tend to load. Even when it was clean, they push. They don't snap, they push. So a lot of it, like, I'm kind of getting hit on blocking stuff, but it's not, like, that concussive, like, oh, crap, I got hit. He's just moving me. So I decided really quick, like, look, this dude is super strong. I can't just stand my ground. He's going to run through me. But if he hits me, if I just move with it, I'm not taking any damage. It sucks on like on film to see it. Like he's like shoving me around like a little kid. It sucks, but I didn't take any damage. Front kick sucked, but like the punching was fine. So sucks on video to see you getting shoved around. Like it looks like you're getting beat up. But I didn't take, like, no, that's fine. I don't care. I didn't take any damage. I'm not hurt and I still won. So like, you know, fuck your stats.
So what was fight week like for you? Because this is something you've anticipated for such a long time. And to have this fight card, I mean, obviously with what's going on in New York and the craziness there, the pandemic, the masks, everything, like how did fight week feel for you?
Normal, which is weird, man. You know, you think everybody talks about the jitters and everything else. It just felt normal to me, man. But like, this is what, fight number 35? It's really cool to be there. It's cool to, like, to be a part of it, do the media and stuff. But it just felt like every other fight week for me, which is kind of a blessing and a curse, I guess. Because, like, you know, you want to get excited and have the experience, and it's just cool. But at the same time, I'm like, man, this is my job. Like, I'm not – I think he thinks I'm, you know, I'm, like, starstruck, whatever. I'm like, bro, this has been my job for 10 years, day in, day out, no breaks. So, blessing and a curse, man. But like, it was just – it felt normal to me. I felt fine. I didn't feel overwhelmed. I didn't feel, like, starstruck. I'm just like, it's every other fight week I've ever done. So once you do something for so long, it's kind of – it's just going to work, man. Like, how do you feel coming to work every day? You're just like, yeah, I like my job. It's, you know, it's cool. I like what I do, but it doesn't freak me out. Like, it's just what we do.
So did all this come about, too, because Deron Wynn kind of fell out as an opponent?
Yeah, I still have no idea what happened to him. They said medical, like, he got pulled out for medical reasons. And
that
no
was his original opponent, Phil Hawes.
Yeah, on the Apex card. The
Apex card.
Yeah.
It didn't happen. And then you were supposed to fight him. Or how did this all come together?
So it was that Thursday before that fight. I get home from sparring. And funny thing, I got rocked that day in sparring, too, which is what sucked. I got cracked in the face. I seriously rocked.
Do we know the guy? Does it start with an S and rhyme
no,
with
No, it actually was. Okay, yeah, okay. It wasn't Sean Strickland, surprisingly. No. I got caught. I got rocked that day. It's whatever. So I go home, eat a huge dinner, go shower, and I hop in bed. Someone's pounding on my front door. It's my manager. I'm like, what's up? He's like, what do you weigh right now? I'm like, I don't know. Check my weight, 197. I'm like, what's going on? He's like, if we make 185 tomorrow morning, we're in the UFC. And before we even knew how, I was fighting. I was like, let's do it. Like, we can make 85. It's fine. Like, it's 11 pounds. It sucks with no prep, but you're like, you know, fuck it. This is my chance. And then you're going to fight in Phil Halls. It's really funny, though. He was actually at one of the gyms I trained at, like, 2 weeks before that prior. And that was the one day I didn't spar. So the one day I decided to not train, Phil Halls was there. Because he sparred Strickland and other people. But I'm like, what a, like, weird coincidence. So missed him on that one. And then I was like, let's go. So I got up. We went to – we cut 10 pounds in about 3 hours. Woke up the next morning, drove to weigh-ins. We go weigh in. Everything's fine. That's the messed up thing. Like, had I got there and they'd be like, oh, the fight's off, you'd be like, okay. But, like, I weighed in. I did, like, I'm, like, off doing medicals. And then they're like, yeah, you're not fighting. And I'm like, okay, that's different. I didn't know you could just say no, but, like, apparently that's a thing. You can just say you don't want to do it. I don't know all the details behind it. No one's ever really said anything, but I guess he just decided he didn't want to take that risk, which, you know, sucks for him. I was already rocked, so, hey, it probably would have been a better.
So then they moved it to UFC 268 because you had already committed. If you did not cut the weight that night, if you didn't drive yourself to the Apex that next morning, you wouldn't have had the opportunity to be at Madison Square Garden.
You know, freaking one of my favorite sayings ever is who dares wins. And, like, you know, it's right. I was like, they're like, oh, it's up a weight class against a guy who's trying to get, you know, who's just outside the rankings. And I'm like, screw it, why not? Like, I fought bigger dudes before. I've never been the biggest guy in my weight. I've always fought. I came up a long time ago, man. Like, now we didn't have contenders. We didn't have, like, these past. We didn't even have, like, real management when I first started. So, like, I had taken some horrific fights in my day. Like, my fifth fight was against Tom Galecchio, and it was, like, 26th fight, one of my really good buddies now. It's, like, his 26th fight is my fifth fight. My eighth fight, I fought Force Pets, his retirement fight. It was his 34th fight. I was like, yeah, I'll fight him. I'm like, sure. So I've taken hard fights my entire life. I've taken fights I wasn't supposed to win. It's whatever. Like, why not?
And you took a fight with Bilal Muhammad in 2014.
Yeah. That actually wasn't terrible because, like, I was like, that was more so my fuck up than anything else. Like, everything leading up to that fight was god-awful, and then just the fight was terrible. Hats off to Bilal, though. You know, he skyrocketed after that, so I take credit for that. Like, hope he sees that. But, yeah, man, I've never been afraid of hard fights. Like, it's never been an issue for me, so I was like, why not? Like, what do I have to lose? Like, you know, this is what I wanted. What's the worst that can happen? I get knocked out? Like, okay, like, so what? Like, I'm still alive, and I get my shot, so I'd rather get in the UFC, even if I freaking fail, even if I, like, washed out. That's more important to me than never having an opportunity to see how far I can go. Like, the worst thing ever is to devote your life to something, like, dedicate all of your time, sacrifice, and then never get to see how far you can go in it.
Amen. I completely agree. Yeah. Well, that's why David has actually convinced me to get back into swimming, because I devoted all my life into it, and I was forced to quit, but now I'm trying to train for the 2024 Olympic trials.
And why not? Because, like, exactly. How much, like, you spend, like...
Your whole life sacrificing.
And pursuing a dream, my dude, like, it sucks because, like, you sacrifice, the people you care about have to sacrifice.
Yeah.
I tell people, like, fighting's a really selfish sport because, like, it's not just you that pays. And, like, I guess any sport's selfish, honestly, because it's not you that has to pay. True. It's the people that care about you and they're around you, you know, like, you're missing an engagement, you can't go do stuff, there's a, you know, you miss birthdays, important events, everything, your time's always taken by something. So, like, to sacrifice all of that and then never, you reach a point to where it's not about, like, failing, it's about never knowing, like, what your ceiling was. And, like, that's why, you know, tried to walk away a few times. And even the people around me are like, are you going to be, even my son was like, what are you going to do, though? Like, well, are you okay with it? And I'm like, I'm not really okay with it. Like, it's the worst feeling ever. So, yeah, like, you know, like, you definitely know. Yeah.
Well, did your son watch that fight?
Yeah, he does. He did watch it. It's funny, though, because my son, I had my first amateur fight 2 weeks after he was born. And he was there for that one. So his entire life, he's just known me to fight. It's always ever known. Like, you know, when he was really young, I didn't have a car and I was training. So I was taking a 2-hour bus ride with a newborn in a car and a stroller to the gym every day. So always known as me fighting. So now he's not even excited. He's like, yeah, you did good. You got hit more than I would like, but he didn't look bad. Like, he's not excited or anything. He's like, critiques me now. I'm like, all right, that's kind of strange, but all right. He doesn't care. As long as I'm okay and we hang out and play video games, he doesn't actually care. He's like, whatever.
Is it something you think he wants to do later on? Or
oh, God, no. I try to give him the box and wrestle for it a little bit, and he's like, look, man, like, he's not, it's not for me. No, he doesn't have to be. It's fine. It's just not his thing. And he likes fighting, but he's got his mind. He's like me at that age where he's like his head in the clouds. He's a super creative kid. He wants to do other stuff. I'm like, you know what? Don't fight. Pay's not that great, and your brain cells will thank you later. So, like, go do something else.
Well, after the fight, I know when you spoke to Joe Rogan, you said that Sean Strickland, was he yelling at you? Or?
So, I'm going to get a compilation made of, like, Sean Strickland in my corner. Because Sean Strickland, I have fights to where Sean Strickland is, like, heckling me. Then he heckles my opponent. Then he's heckling. Like, at one point in the fight, he stopped cornering me. He started coaching my opponent against me. Like, I'm dead serious. He started coaching my opponent against me. He's like, I'm just like, really, man? He's just, Sean is his own thing. So at one point, Sean's like, you're fighting like a pussy, stop. And I'm like, you know what? Fine, maybe you're right. And that gets like a time when Joe Rogan's like, oh, he's got to do something to get his respect. So I'm like, you know what? We've taken enough time. He's slowed down enough. I can start like applying myself now. But, every fighter's different, man. I'm a guy who, like, I need somebody occasionally on the outside to be like, okay, you're taking too long, because, like, time's really different, like, in the fight. Like, everything's kind of, everything feels like it's not going as fast as it is. So, like, sometimes you're burning time, you just don't get it. Like, you're just like, you know, it doesn't feel like it's going that fast. So I need somebody to not sugarcoat it. Like, hey, like, don't be a bitch. Like, go finish. Like, okay. And worked out well.
And how riled up was Sean Strickland that he wasn't even able to fight on the fight card he was supposed to fight because Luke Rockhold had to pull out of the fight because of the injury?
God, the Luke Rockhold Sean Strickland beef will forever be one of the funniest.
Will we ever see them fight?
I don't think they will, and it's fine. But like, Sean has the biggest hate boner for Luke Rockhold, and it's an uncomfortable hate boner, and like it's. He just, like, messages, he just picks on him. I'm like, bro, this dude's going to shoot you one day. Like, Luke Rockhold's probably going to, like, murder you for just being this dick. But, like, It's cool though. It worked out for me though. You'd be selfish about it, but I got to have like one of my like best friends and one of my best training partners in the corner with me, and like he knows how I function, so it was kind of cool to see him freak out. Like, yeah, the entire time he's screaming like, "Just knock him out! You're better than him! You're better than him!" And like, sometimes you need that reinforcement when you're doing stuff. And he's just like, "Just finish him!" And he lost his shit, so it was great to see.
I think, and you feel free to chime in, you'll know more, and from me watching from the outside and watching some of your practices and shit, he seems like a really freaking great teammate, and I'm sure he can get under the skin of some people who don't like that personality, but overall, deep down inside, it seems like his intentions are for the best, and I could see him being a good friend to the people he likes.
Bro, deep down inside, he's a really great dude, but it's also covered by layers of just like, I don't even know what to call. He's incredibly abrasive to like a lot of people, but I think it's abrasive if you don't understand that like I just don't take anything he says like personally. And people like society is very like sensitive now about things. We're very careful about what we say. He's just a throwback to like what we were when like we were out as like Vikings and like mercenaries on a battlefield. He's a throwback to that time. Like he says what he feels and like he doesn't sugarcoat it. So positive or negative, you know, he just says how he feels, and it rubs people the wrong way because we're used to being a little bit more like tactful about things. But at the same time, like the dude will literally give you the shirt off his back. He'll mock you for it the entire time, but he will actually give you the shirt off his back. Like he's, if you ever need to like work for a fight or you got something coming up and you need to work, he's the first guy in the room. They'll be like, "I'll do it. This is what we do. Let's go." And he'll be about it, but he's gonna go about it in the most abrasive Sean Strickland way possible. So once people people loosen up and learn to not take him as like seriously and like don't take it personally, he's a really fun dude to be around. Like he almost got me killed one time when he took me paddleboarding, and like I don't paddleboard, I don't do water.
Paddleboarding's fun.
I am the most like seasick dude ever. Like I don't, motion sickness is a thing that just like rocks me. He's like, "I've never seen someone get like motion sick on a paddleboard." I'm in like the freaking San Diego Bay, like dying, about to fall off a paddleboard, pass out. I'm like, "Dude, I'm gonna die here." But I mean, he's a really fun dude, man. He's a really good dude. People just have to learn to like not take things so personally.
Well, one of your, or I guess the Schmo's best interviews, right, was with Sean Strickland. I'm sure he caught you off guard or no.
I would say that's the leading Schmo interview of the year. But yeah, you make a cameo.
I
know.
End. I did like, see
what is
that?
You creep in there after practice.
I have a special power to just like show up in the back of things, like it the was weird, great. Like creepy, yeah.
Yeah, because usually I'm always with David when he does all the interviews and stuff, but I wasn't there with him that day. And then
New York.
Or New York because I was sick, coughing. I'm okay now, though, but it was rough. It sucked. I don't get sick that often.
She didn't have COVID, though.
No.
I've got COVID twice. I understand. I've gotten it twice. It's been fucking miserable.
Well, I didn't go with you, but then when I rewatched that interview, and then when, what was he saying to you? Like, you remind him of those kids in high school?
How he hated you because you got laid in high school, probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of like Sasquatch in the background, like kind of like show up, like, fully fade away. Yeah.
That was great.
And after that moment, it was all uphill for you.
Yeah, right. See,
that's
so
true.
Maybe it was a schmo. Yeah, maybe there's something there. Like, so maybe you're onto something. I don't know.
But go back to something you said earlier. You're going to ride this thing out. You know, you talked about having this window and stuff like that, 34 years, not young or whatever. Like, how do you know how long this thing is going to last? You're going to ride the wave? Do you have some sort of shelf life in the back of your mind, or how are you going to take this thing moving forward?
I know that I have at least 4 years in me. Like, I'm lucky. I'm not a guy who had a bunch of knee surgeries or anything like that. I'm really durable. Like, thank the ancestors there. I got really good genetics. I'm really durable. I haven't had any I'm not too beat up. So I know I can, like, squeeze out at least 4 good solid years, like 34, 35, like, our best years now. I just want to go these next 4 years. I just want to get every fight in that I can. Like, I mean, I think I'm like tied right now for the most fights, the most wins in a year right now with, I forgot who I'm tied with, but I'm tied with somebody right now. And then,
are
like,
they in the UFC?
Yeah. It's T-Rex. Like, what's it?
Terrence McKinney.
Yeah. I'm tied with McKinney right now.
He had
most
a
wins.
Crazy injury over in Arizona. He's coming back though. He's coming back pretty soon.
He's I think he's on the 11th card.
Yeah. It's coming up.
So I'm tied with him right now for most wins and most finishes. I think Kayla Harrison as well. I think it's a three-way tie. Or I think McKinney may be in front. I don't know. So I'm trying to pass him up, man. I'm trying to get every fight I possibly can. Like, I'm never going to have this opportunity again. So why not just run with it? Like, I'm healthy. I don't get out of shape. So I'm just trying to take every fight they can give me, man. Like, why not make the money I can and get as far as I can and have something to tell my kids about or grandkids about, you know, when the time comes.
This is your division, middleweight 185, or would you fight a different weight class?
I am naturally a welterweight.
Right.
So right now I am just masquerading as a middleweight. But I'm just like, honestly, I don't know, man. I just stopped one of their like most touted prospects. I didn't feel weak. I didn't feel too bad. I mean, he's definitely stronger than me. Like, dude's a freaking hoss. But I think we'll spend a little bit of time, like, you know, try to put on some weight, put on some strength and see how I feel. But for me to make 170, man, it's miserable. It's such a bad experience. Like, it's absolutely miserable. Like it's, I hate it. It's really, like, lowers your quality of life. So I think I may just hang out at 85 for a little bit. Things start going south at 85. We'll scurry away to middle to 170. I'm not afraid to be like, right, peace out. I'm gone. But for right now, you know what? Why not? I just beat one of the guys they were, like, really touting. He beat Imanov. Imanov's like what rank? Like, he's gonna be like ranked like 11 or some crap.
Yeah,
like
he's gonna
that.
Take Edmund's yeah. position.
Yeah, so I'm like, maybe there's something to this. Like, maybe I've been killing myself for no reason. I felt good. Fight week was good. Maybe there's something to 85. So we'll see.
I like it. I like it.
But speaking of 170, what did you make of the main event?
I was actually shocked that Colby did as well as he did there. Like, he it was closer than I thought it was going to be. I thought Usman was going to blow him out, honestly. I really thought he was. Colby was tough, man. He's just such a tough dude. Like, it's unfortunate, like, to be – it sucks to be Colby Covington because you're the best dude on the planet if Kamaru Usman didn't exist. You're the best 170 in the world if there wasn't Kamaru Usman. Like, right now, there's always – every fighter knows there's one guy who's got your number. And unfortunately for Colby, like, that one guy who has his number happens to be the champ. But, like – it was a hell of a fight, man. I really thought Usman was going to blow through him. And, like, Colby was just like, I'm not going to die. I'm not going to go away. So I was actually really impressed. And Usman just keeps getting better every fight, which is absolutely terrifying.
Is Usman the best welterweight of all time? Because everyone's now talking about GSP, Usman.
Nah, GSP. I think GSP still has that title. Like, Usman is on his way to, like, you know, being up there. But GSP had a run that was just absolutely insane. Like, I would say Usman's probably the second best welterweight of all time right now. And, like, you know, if he keeps this up and he, you know, finishes his career out like this, then I think he could pass GSP, honestly. Like, he's done some crazy stuff, but GSP killed everything and everyone for years.
But as someone who's had 35 pro fights like yourself, like, you've seen the evolution of this game. You're living in it right now. Are the fighters better now than they were when you started out?
Oh, it's completely different, man. Like, I remember MMA before GSP fought Matt Serra. Yeah. And then Matt Serra beat GSP and ruined MMA for, like, 6 years. Because when GSP came back, it was, like, 4 years. When GSP came back, he was the wrestle-heavy GSP. And then everyone adopted that approach for a long time. Like, damn it, Matt Serra, you ruined MMA. Like, so, yeah, Matt Serra killed MMA for, like, 3 years. And now you're starting to see it kind of shifted, like, the paradigm shift a little bit to now. There's a shift to where now we went from the Chuck Liddell counter-striker to the GSP, like, ground control, to now it's just such a crazy mix of just all well-rounders and then the Dagestanis. So, like, you're either an all-rounder or you're a Dagestani wrestler. So, like, those are the two styles right now. But you just see everything change. Even the Dagestani wrestling style is so much different than, like, the traditional wrestling style that you see. It's so different, man. Like, it's the way they approach things, the way they do things is so different. And now you're seeing every other fighter start to, like, you know, incorporate those techniques and, like, their methods of doing stuff and their grappling style. So now, like, we're in the middle of, like, what comes next is the prototype. The guys coming up now who are 16, 17 in a gym are learning how to grapple like that from the beginning. I remember being an 18-year-old kid in the gym. And now I'm looking at, like, 16-year-olds, and I'm like, oh, man, this is going to be really bad. And it's weird when you see a kid who's, like, 15 or 16, like, training, and you're like, that kid's going to be a problem in the future. Then you're like, holy shit, like, he's going to be a problem in the future. You're like, ooh, thankfully I'll be done by the time it matters. But, like, man, 10 years from now, I'm really curious to see like the where the caliber of fighter is. Like it's gotten. Yeah. I train a 10 year old girl, Sophia Montoya, and like she had her first fight already at 9 years old.
Wow.
She fought at 9. It was craziest experience ever. So we're out there in Sophia the Bull, and we're out in we're in Florida, and she fights her first round, hard first round. So I go in the cage and like I'm like, hey, how are you feeling? And thinking like she's gonna be like, you're 9 years old, you gotta be freaking out, right? You're fighting. She looks at me like, I love this, and I'm like, concerning. I was like, all right, cool. Like, not the answer I thought, but they're getting younger and younger, and they're just bred for it, man.
I was just having this conversation the other day too, but think about what the UFC has done to the sport of mixed martial arts. Like, think about this era and the time we're living in right now. Like, think of professional football, professional baseball and basketball, the inception of it in the early part of the 20th century. We are living right now, this sport, 28 years old. Like, while this main sport has become this mainstream sport, which it is now, top four in this country, and it's only going to climb in this country and worldwide, it's just rising in popularity. We've been alive to see an entire sport kind of come into its own, right? And it's only growing now. It's only getting better.
How long did it take the NFL to get like non-leather helmets into, right, like something serious? But we've watched the evolution of like no gloves to like gloves to the current glove to like shoes to everything. Yeah. Yeah, like everything else, the rule change. Remember like that first, like the first like two UFCs, the guy won via like constant nut, like elbows to the nuts.
Yes.
I'm like, what?
And the fucking headbutts too.
Yeah, like, oh my. And then, like, I remember it was UFC 1, the Italian guy fought the sumo guy. There's a French kickboxer with the sumo guy. And he like kicked him, like the guy was down. He kicked him in the face and he embedded his teeth in the guy's foot. And now just to see like where it started to where it is, and like it's kind of crazy to see in real time. So now you're like, where do we end up in 10 years? Like,
yeah, it was completely barbaric into a sport, yeah, which obviously at times can be barbaric, especially when you watch a fight like what Gaethje and Chandler did to each other. Those guys would have fought to the death,
yeah,
had there been no referee.
It's the first time ever I've seen this fight that good. And people were like, you know what? I'm glad with 3 rounds. Like, I don't want to see more. That was perfect. When the fans are like, thank you, we don't need more. Like, that's just the right amount. Like, that's a crazy thing because, like, nobody wanted to see 5 rounds. We're all like, that's enough. Like, thank you. You all are legends. No more, please. Go to a hospital.
Yeah. That division, too, is crazy.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be a 55er. Screw that. Like, that's probably the worst division to exist right now. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, and 170, when you're talking about, like, Khamzat.
170.
That dude... I've trained with that guy for a while. That dude, I don't understand how he makes 170, first of all. He is massive. Like, that is a large human. And, like, I'm like, okay, he feels like an 85er, but he made 70 again. I'm like, what science is behind this? He is a massive dude. He's super strong. I do not understand, like, how he exists as a person. I am incredible. I want answers. Like... It is insane. It's mind-boggling. Khamzat and Sean Strickland are two strongest people, like my size, like just like, but the two strongest dudes you run into. I'm like, why are you this strong? Like, it, like watching those two grapple is insane. I'm just like
those two grapple.
Yeah, it's insane.
I want to. What did that look like?
They're just like you ever see like two cats just fight?
Yeah,
and they're just going. It's insane, man. Like they're two dudes who are like really athletic and don't quit. And they both have that mentality to where like they don't quit.
And Strickland, someone who's fought at 170 and then moved up to 185. Khamzat's the type of guy that does both 170, 185, but I think right now he's just focusing on fighting at 170.
I don't know why though, man. Like, I think honestly 85 is a much better path to a belt for him. Like, I think 85 is a much better. He's so strong. He's had no issue at 85. Like, you know, I'm gonna assume being that big, his life sucks getting the 70. He wasn't around for that camp. I didn't see him at 70, but like, I'm assuming it sucks. He's way bigger than me, and I struggle to get down. There's no way he's getting down easily. Like, I think 85 is a way easier path to a belt.
Yeah. So Sean Strickland wants to be on the Anaheim card, but that's likely not going to happen. He wants to fight Jack Hermanson, who I think has also worked a lot with Khamzat as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they've worked together a lot. But, like, And why is the Anaheim going to happen? When is that?
Well, that's January. Maybe it's going to happen. Maybe February, because I don't know. Is it too late to add him to the card? Do you want to keep him to the next fight card? Is the card too full? Is it booked?
Have they booked that card yet? Who's headlining that?
That's Francis Ngannou, who I'm going to ask you about next, against Ciryl Gane. And then Brandon Moreno and Figueiredo, too. Or three.
Yeah.
Damn. Mm. That's the main and co-main. Two belts on the line.
I don't know. That's weird. I didn't think about that at all. I didn't know that was the lineup. That's pretty stacked already.
It's gonna be a good card. Wanted to ask you, though, too, because Francis Ngannou, obviously Extreme Couture. I'm not sure if you saw it, too. Yeah. He's walking in the hallway. UFC catcher this. Because I saw Ciryl because
it
he's in
like
the Mono's corner.
It was like a WWE promo.
It was I was so awkward when I watched that. I was like, that is the most uncomfortable non-exchange I've ever seen. To where, like, you ever see something that's so, like, awkward, it's so cringy, these for all around. You're like, bro, I'm uncomfortable watching it. And, like, man, like, Ciryl, hats off to Ciryl. He took, like, a champ. He's just like, all right, like, that's fine. But Francis just walks by. That's the one dude you don't want, like, cold shouldering you. I'm like, come on, bro. Like, don't do that.
No, I love everyone there. And, like, it was so funny. Just so you got this coach right next to him. Then you got the UFC PR guy, Christoph, right there. So Francis stops, or Markel, his manager, was walking with him. Markel stopped, gave Christoph a hug, who's standing next to Ciryl's coach. And Ciryl's standing there. And then just proceeded to walk completely forward.
That, I was like, oof. Like, that was...
That's cool.
That was it. That was, like, one of the coldest things I've ever seen someone do on camera. And I was like, all right, Francis. Like, which is funny, because he's the nicest, warmest dude ever. Yeah. Like, he's the nicest dude ever. Yeah. Like, it's really weird to see, like, Francis be, like, that's scary, man. Because, like, he's the nicest, most, like, well, you see him, hey, hello, Kurt. He's the nicest dude ever. And to see him, like, blank you out, I'm like, bro, that's concerning. I'm like, I don't want to see an angry Francis.
This fight is... Yeah. I'm so excited for this fight because we keep talking about training partners. Those two were training partners, so they know each other, and that's Francis's former coach as well. I mean, the storylines here are just automatically set up, and they both know the task at hand. I think he's just dialed in, laser focus, and let's get January through before we can be friends again.
And that's the thing, man. Like, you've seen, like, how much Francis improves, like, every fight, him being focused, and now he's, like, laser focused. I'm just like... The improvements are crazy, but now he's like dialed in. Like, you're not gonna make a fool of me, and I'm like, bro, that's a scary Francis Ngannou. Like, he's already freaking a nightmare, but now, like, you've never seen him act like that, and I'm like, that is concerning.
Is he back at every practice right now? Is, like, I know training camp probably hasn't officially started yet, but is he back training kind of like full time in the gym right now?
Well, I missed all last week, so I don't know if he was in or not, because I was
in New York.
So, yeah. But he's that dude's, I mean, he's super consistent. Plus, like, now he has, like, you know, champ now, so you have, like, big guys come in for him. So he kind of has, like, a separate practice. He'll still do a team practice, but he's, like, two practices every day or whatever he does. But I haven't seen him yet, but, like, my God, like, it's really insane to see somebody that big and, like, who improves that much. Now they're like, I'm serious. That's rough.
Yeah, I mean, when he was able to stuff Stipe's takedown in that second fight, you know, and even took the back there, I'm like, holy shit.
So when he stuffed that first takedown, like, I told people, you could feel the collective, like, buttholes of the world, like, ooh, like, Titan, like, ooh, this is ugly. And, like, it happened, and, like, I felt bad for Stipe for a second. I was like, oh, no. Like, because I'm looking, cheering for Francis at the same time. I'm like, oh, like, is there a plan B? And there's not a good plan B. I'm like, oh, no. Because we all know how this ends. It's like watch, like, you know, the horror movie, but you know how it ends already. And you're just like, oh, no, you're not going to make it, are you? And he did not.
But you got to give him the trilogy fight. You gave it to DC. He's the consensus greatest heavyweight, at least in UFC history, if not all time, because you got people talking about Fedor and whatnot. Why don't you give Stipe the trilogy fight?
I don't know why everybody in UFC hates Stipe. I don't know what he did. I guess I think he may have been – it kind of feels like he was a curse of, like, being the nice guy to where, like, you know – there's no Stipe drama. He's just a nice dude. He's like, all right, yeah, he's nice, he's professional. And, like, it's what you want as a fighter. You want your fighter to be. But on the flip side, like, you know, I don't think he's, like, bringing in the attention that they like giant scary Francis or your, you know, more outspoken guys. Stipe is just a regular dude, which is like really cool, but you know, I don't think he's the promotional powerhouse they want.
Or he's not even technically a full-time fighter because he's a firefighter too.
How messed up is that? Like, people out here getting smashed by a fireman. You're like, okay, I do this part-time. And you're like, huh. People like having all these crazy camps, training, living in the gym. He's like, yeah, man, I did a six-hour shift and went and hit mitts. And like, this dude just beating you up. That's got to be disheartening.
And then isn't Kyle Daukus' brother,
Chris Daukus fighting Derek
Lewis? He's a police officer. You got the firefighter.
Right. Hats off to them, man, because like...
Heavyweights.
Yeah, it's right. It's the joy of the heavyweight division. Being a heavyweight has its own set of rules, I feel like. Like, you can... Your career lasts longer. There's like less you have to do. It's really... It has its own set of rules. It's a privilege of
being
a heavyweight.
Barely any weight cut.
Yeah, right?
I mean, that's why I was so impressed with Chris Barnett doing the front flip and the dancing the other night.
He's a good dancer.
Yeah, so I was like, all right. That is my new favorite fighter is Chris Barnett. I was like, I will watch anything you do. I will officially watch, like, for shits and giggles. That dude is just, he's out there. That's my new favorite fighter is Chris Barnett.
He's the man.
And his post-fight speech was very classy.
He's just a great. He gave
John Vellante.
Yeah, John Villa, the mic. He's a good dude. Like, and it's. I'm happy to see that as well because I know he's been around. I followed him for a while. He's been around for a long time, and like he's waited for those shots a long time. It took him a long time to get here too, so it's cool to see him get that win at Madison Square Garden. He deserved that 50K. Like, I'm happy he got it.
So aside from your fight, what was your favorite fight to watch from UFC 268?
Uncomfortably, Gaethje versus Chandler. Like
that first
I watched
round.
It,
oh
it
my
was
gosh.
Very. It was one of those fights where I'm like, this is great. At the same time, I was like, I really wish this would stop, because like they're. Like Gaethje's one of my favorite fighters, just the way he is. But I also absolutely love Michael Chandler. Michael Chandler is like the most down to earth good dude. Everything he says is a motivational speech. Like I'm just like just listen to Michael Chandler talk about anything on repeat and you'd be like, you know what? I can change my life. He's talking about barbecue sauce. You're like, I can't change my life with barbecue sauce, Michael Chandler. So he's just a walking motivational speech. So like to watch them go at it like that, it sucks to see one of them lose, but I'm like, I mean, you didn't lose any respect. The fans, fighters, and company are all like, bro, you didn't lose any standing in that. It's just one of the greatest fights I've ever seen.
Definitely. And it's like, what do you do from here for Michael Chandler? Because Gaethje, I think you have to give him the title shot next for the winner of Poirier Oliveira. I think he's earned that. But what do you do if you're Chandler?
I mean, honestly, if Gaethje's the number one contender, then Chandler's number two. Like, it's just one of those things.
But what about Beneil Dariush? He's like on like a 7-fight win streak. Everyone forgets about him. I keep bringing him up.
I'm friends with Benny. I forgot. I was like, oh yeah, he didn't forget about Dariush. Yeah. And he's also another great dude who just deserves a shot. Yeah. So, I mean, I think at the top five, that's just especially at 55 because how crazy it is. Like, you cut off at the top five, and they're going to have to fight it out, and they'll have one guy rotating through. But, like, yeah. So, the top five of 55 is just absolutely insane. It's a murderer's row, so.
And then there's Islam, too. That's also in the top five, I believe.
Is he top five now?
I think he's five, right?
He was five before he fought Dan Hooker.
He didn't go up. He went down, so.
Well, honestly, like, there you go. Like, those five need to fight it out. And, you know, what else do you do with them? Like, you can't.
I saw Chandler calling for Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
I think he beats the brakes off of Conor McGregor.
I don't think Conor's going to take that fight.
I don't think Conor likes fighting anymore.
I think Conor, he tweeted him back.
He said, you know, one day down the road. But I think obviously he would fight Poirier for the fourth time before that. And I still think that Nate Diaz trilogy, even though Nate's got one fight left in the deal.
What are they?
I could see Nate waiting to have his last fight with Conor McGregor so he gets that trilogy.
That'll happen in like 2024. Like, I'm not going to wait for that. It's like, oh my God.
But you just said you don't think Conor.
I don't think he wants to fight. So Marvin Hagler, the boxer, one of the greatest boxers of all time, said it the best. It's hard to get up in the morning. I get up at 4 a.m. when you're sleeping on silk sheets. And what he means by that is once you get enough, like, once you've earned enough and you have enough, the fire starts to die. And I think a lot of people have seen that fire in Conor, like, comes and goes. Like, think about when he started, man, his attitude when he started versus the moment they gave him money. And he's just like, what does he have to fight for, man? Like, he's got everything he could possibly want. He already has a legacy. Like, honestly, like, you know, half-assing it only hurts his legacy. He's got a legacy. nobody in his family will have to work ever again. Like, how do you make yourself go to the gym and sweat and bleed and suffer when, like, bro, I made it. Like, you did it. Like, I don't think.
It's just got to be a pride thing over anything at this point.
Relevance. Like, hardest thing about, like, being an athlete, especially being in the limelight, whatever, is once the attention goes away, you don't want to give it up. Like, it's the need for relevance.
That's exactly what I feel like it is, too. It's like he's seeing all this go by. But even without him competing inside the octagon, he's by far the most popular fighter that's ever existed in mixed martial arts. Like, he's more important to MMA than a Floyd Mayweather is to boxing.
He's the figurehead of the sport. Like, you know, for better or worse, it's Conor McGregor. That's the guy they blew up. They made him into that. And you know, there's an unfortunate side effect of, like, how long does he have to do it? Because he's got everything you could possibly want. And, like, yeah, we all want to be in the limelight. We all want attention. But that can't be your only motivation, man. Because, like, when it comes down to it, when you're getting hit, when you're struggling in that fight, we're in that last round and you're dead tired, you're not fighting for a check. You're like, I can go make half my check or whatever he's making. He's like, I've got millions in the bank. I don't have to be this. Like, why am I getting beat up for? And, like, that's where you see guys start to stumble.
Yeah. No, it's very, very true. It's very true.
I don't think he wants to fight anymore. I think he likes to fight, but I don't think he's – I think Conor McGregor can still fight. Don't get me wrong. But I don't think he's the fighter that he was, because, like, it's hard to be a fighter without any hunger. Yeah. Like, when you made it, like, what do you do from there? You hang on, you defend it for a while, then you're like, all right, I'm done.
So what else can we cover to let the audience know about you, man? Because I just want to keep seeing you be active, make a name for yourself.
We're very happy paid your for dues. You.
It's been a wild ride, man. Thank you. Yeah. I don't know. I'm gonna tell you guys something seriously. I'm like, Sean will tell you, he makes fun of me all the time. I'm like the least exciting fighter life ever. I train, I go home, I play way too many video games.
Which, like, kind of video games?
I am I just actually got into PC. I just got PC. I was always a PlayStation guy, but I am a range from, like, shooters, MMOs, everything, like MOBAs. Like, Sean's like, you don't even play good stuff. Like, he's like, I don't want to be a wizard, I want to shoot people. I'm like, bro, I am the biggest nerd who's ever lived. Like, I'm a proud nerd, I've always been a nerd. I just happen to be a nerd who can fight people, but, like, I am that guy. So, like, it's... I don't do anything, man. I don't really drink. I don't smoke. I don't, like, do stuff. I don't party. I just train and, like, play games. Like, my entire life has been getting here. So that's all I do, man. Like, outside of that, like, me and my son will play games for, like, 6 hours on the weekends until, like, one of us is like, I'm getting a headache. We got to stop. Yeah, we'll play. So we play. I play a lot with my son a lot. And that's about it, man. Like, yeah, I'm trying to spend time with him or just hang out or train. That's it.
Well, good. Where can the audience find more of you?
You guys can follow me on Twitter at ActionMan513. And this is going to be really confusing, but on Instagram as well as KingOfCombat513. They're making me change that because I guess the UFC has forcibly decided, like, we're going to stick with the Action Man. So I didn't know what they were going to announce me as. I have, like, 7 nicknames, so they picked Action Man.
They picked it, not you.
I have a rotating, like, selection of nicknames that we go through. Well, the Action Man is my original one. It's the one I've had the longest.
How'd you get that one?
Completely non-fighting related. Yeah. I was 16 at a girl's house, and my friends were supposed to be, like, watching for her parents. And they kind of didn't watch, so her parents come home, and I have a choice to, like, get caught or jump out of a second-story window. So I decided that, thinking 16, me being an idiot, there's a tree there. I'm like, what I can do is jump out, grab the tree branch. And in my head, I thought I swing from, like, branch to branch, so I got down, get the tree, and go down. Jumped out, grabbed that first branch, snapped, like, completely snapped. So now I'm tumbling down tree branches, like, hitting every branch, like, slam into the tree, hit the ground, like, shatter my ankle, but I hit, like, a front roll and, like, come up running to the car as her, like, family screaming in the background, like, I'll get back here. So he ran to the car. We used to be a TV show when we were young called Action Man. So my buddy was like, oh, the goddamn Action Man over here, like, tried to, like, plan this out, failed miserably, but still made it look cool. So at 16, I became the Action Man. I've had that name since I was 16 years old.
I love that
That's
story.
That's awesome. Yeah, yeah.
I think of that. I think of Demolition Man.
Yeah, actually, like Action Man, the greatest hero of them all, Action Man. So, like, yeah, that's a... If you guys haven't seen it, Google... It's like 2001 Action Man cartoon. It was on Fox. And you'll see. It's the great... It's the most stupid cartoon ever, but that's what came up at the time where I didn't die from that, so... I've been Action Man since I was 16.
Well, the UFC picked the right nickname.
Yeah, it's the oldest one. Yeah, so I guess I will. It's a King of Combat 513 on Instagram. I will change it back to Action Man soon, though, so it'll all be uniform.
So watch this podcast before we change it. That's how we do that.
All right.
Well, I don't even think we did an introduction for this. What episode number is this? 83.
Yep.
83.
Oh, we're getting close to 100. All right.
Yeah, we're getting close to the century mark. We appreciate you coming on, especially, 2 days after the big victory?
Yeah, it's been a wild weekend, but I'm glad to be here. It's fun to talk about it. I'm happy to be here because the only other option was I lost, and then I probably wouldn't be here. So, you know what? Everything went smooth. So,
Hey, that's how life goes.
Hey, you got to roll with it. You know, when you strike gold, you got to roll with it. So, why not?
Love that mindset. Episode 83 of the Schmozone podcast.
With Chris Curtis.
Because
you didn't
man.
Do the intro.
Wow, I didn't even say Chris Curtis, the Action Man.
All right.
Wow, we just went right into it.
Hello.
All right, we are out.